All right, good afternoon, everybody. It's great to see some old friends here in the legislature. Amen. My name is Beam Furr. I'm Broward County Mayor. And why don't we go ahead and first start with introductions, and I'll go start with to my right.
Good day. I am State Senator Rosalyn Osgood, represent Senate District 32. I am filling in for an amazing chair of the legislative delegation, Representative Marie Woodson, who had a previous commitment and couldn't be here with us today.
Hello, I'm just sitting down. Good afternoon, everybody. Nan Rich, County Commissioner, but former State Senator, and happy to see so many of my friends here today, and Barbara was here to talk to us a little bit this morning. So happy to be here to discuss a lot of issues with you all today. Welcome.
Morning. Good morning, Mark Bogan, Broward County Commissioner.
Hello, Bob Milton, County Auditor.
Good afternoon, Christine Hunchofsky, State Representative for District 95.
Good afternoon, Tina Polsky, State Senator, District 30.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Barbara Sharif, State Senator for District 35, and it's glad to be home.
Good afternoon. Robin Bartleman, State Representative for District 103.
Good afternoon. Michael Ruiz, Assistant County Administrator with Broward County.
I'm going to let Anika. Sorry, she can sit right there if she wants. We can. Go ahead. Anika, you want to introduce yourself real quick?
Anika Ashton, Deputy County Attorney.
Kristen.
Kristen Carter, Assistant County Attorney.
Now my turn. Monica Sapero, County Administrator. Welcome.
Marty Cassini, Director of Intergovernmental Affairs for Broward County.
Representative Felicia Robinson for House District 104.
Stuart Rimland, Legislative Council, Intergovernmental Affairs.
Hazel Rogers, Broward County Commissioner, former State Rep. Welcome to everyone. Good to see you.
Michael Udine, County Commissioner, District 3, not a State Rep and not a former Senator.
Hi, I'm Steve Geller. I spent 20 years in the Florida Legislature, 9 in the House, 11 in the Senate. I've been doing this so long. My first 8 years in the House, the Democrats were in the majority. That did happen. That was the case at one point in time. And currently Broward County Commissioner. And look forward to seeing my former colleagues here.
Lamar Fisher, Broward County Commissioner, District 4, the best district in Broward County.
Senator Polsky, you want to introduce yourself? Oh, you did. Oh, I didn't think you did. Okay. First of all, I want to thank you all for being here. Obviously, our success depends on us working together, which I think we've always been able to do very well. You all have an incredibly tough job ahead of you. You know, I think all the sessions lately have been just tough, but I think this next one's going to be even tougher. And we appreciate everything you all are doing, playing defense when you have to, and getting some great projects through when you can. So we have our particular priorities, and we're going to have a chance to discuss them. But first, let me pass it on over to Rosalyn.
Thank you, Mayor Furr, and I'm going to ask for a moment of personal privilege. I love celebrating my colleagues, and today is Representative Hunchofsky's birthday. So would you indulge me in saying happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Christina.
Happy birthday to you. Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you.
I think we sang it every key at once.
That love is very important to those of us that are legislators in the state of Florida at this time. It is a delight to be with you today to listen to your concerns. We work very diligently on your behalf in Tallahassee, and we will continue to do so. As we move forward in this meeting, we might have questions, but it is our desire to represent you and represent you well in Broward County. It is a very different climate, and I like to hear all the former people when they announce themselves. And I can just tell you, for me, every year it's different. What happened last year, it's a totally different place to navigate the next year. But it's always an exciting time to be with you. We understand local control and home rule as a product of the Broward League of Cities. And it's just a delight to have this time with you. And we're so grateful that we're able to be here today, and we look forward working with you and making sure that Broward County is well represented in the state of Florida.
Thank you. And with that, we have tried to make it a little easier. We used to have like a whole book of all our priorities. We have narrowed it down to six. Obviously, there's a ton of other things, but
Mr. Mayor, we had another representative join us.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Dana?
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commission. Good to be with you. Dan Daly, representing Northwest Broward County. Pleasure to be here.
Glad you made it. The six priorities that we're looking at, obviously they encompass a lot of things, but they are, one, no surprise, affordable housing; two, homelessness; three, economic development; four, environmental protection; five, transportation; and six, community health. There's obviously all kind of different parts of that. And I think what I know you had mentioned to me, you kind of want to be listening to what our thoughts are. So I'm going to go around the room with each commissioner so you get a chance to elaborate on those. And I'm going to start with Vice Mayor Bogan.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to talk about the invisible one. It's called the seventh. That's not on here. One that everybody's been talking about. It's in the newspapers. That has affected us. The state of Florida has come down here with the governor auditing us. And the thing that we've not talked about that should be introduced as legislation is that every sheriff of every county in the state of Florida should be audited by the county in which it's giving funds. I don't understand why we can't get legislation. It's not on here, but DOGE came down. Didn't we just have a big audit on how we're spending money all over the state? They're looking at how spending money, which is fair. We want to be efficient. We want to be, you know, as economical as possible. But why not? Well, I don't care if the sheriff's Democrat, Republican. Every department of every agency of every government should be able to be audited. We give, how much, Monica, do we give to the sheriff's office? About?
$850 million.
We give over $800 million a year, and we can't audit one penny. The public needs to understand, we give over $800 million a year, and we cannot audit one penny. And this is horrible. The all I could do is ask our state legislature. They should want to do this. This is not a partisan issue, and I could just hope that somebody takes the ball and runs with it. That's my comments on the invisible seventh issue. Thank you.
Senator Rich.
It's okay. I support his idea. He wants me to start saying that. I have a couple of things I would like to mention. I don't think it's any secret. Affordable housing is where I've spent a lot of my time as a county commissioner, and actually in the legislature as well. But I'm proud to say that we are kind of recognized right now as being kind of the leader in terms of what we're doing in this county for affordable housing. And we, as some of you may not, I think you probably are aware, we have our own affordable housing tax structure that, you know, that was voted on by the voters of this state, of this county, where they supported affordable housing. So anything that, that comes in from other cities and money of our own here, we put into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, and it can only, unlike Sadowski, it can only be used for affordable housing. And we spent, we last year our budget had $27 million in there. About $20 million of it was CRA money, and the rest was general revenue dollars. And this year, despite all kinds of problems, and as you know, looking at how we had to cut our budget here, and I won't go into all of that, somebody else will go into that, but we are putting the same $27 million in for affordable housing because we understand the importance it is and the problem it is in this community of the affordability crisis. So I'm you know, I'm just hoping that when you get back there and look at Sadowski and everything connected with affordable housing, you'll try and keep it on track to be used for affordable housing as much as of it as you possibly can do. I also want to mention that it bleeds into homelessness. Homelessness is resolved by affordable housing. And we are getting we're going to be having tremendous cuts from the federal government with regard to homelessness. We've already had, I think, about $10 million, and now they're talking about cutting the entire funding block for permanent supportive housing. And so that is a dramatic, will be a dramatic decrease all over the country, but we will have a serious problem with that as well. So those are you know, two areas that I think, you know, I hope you all will keep your eye on that as much as you possibly can. Something that is not on this list, which I do want to mention, and we did something here. We put it into our legislative package, and it has to do with vaccinations. And this commission unanimously supports keeping the law, the state law, the way it is now, in terms of opposing any amendments to the state law that eliminate or reduce current statutorily required student immunizations, and support amendments to the state law that add immunizations that are currently required by only the rule of the Department of Health. So we have seven vaccines that are mandated and are in state law. I remember because I was there, it was 2002 when that was put into the state statutes, and we have things obviously like polio, diphtheria, measles, both and German measles, whooping cough. And by the way, there is a new outbreak of whooping cough in South Carolina, and so this is coming to us all over this country. And I'm hoping that we can just at least at a minimum maintain the current state law, and then if possible, there are four other ones that are not within state law that should be not only under the Department of Health, they should be in the state statute as well, so that nobody can take them out without going back to the state legislature to remove them, God forbid. But I mean, but at least you don't have one person like Latipo who can come in and decide that you are not going to do this vaccination anymore. And so I just wanted to add that because we did put that into our legislative package rather than each of us just independently asking you, because we feel it's that important and critical to the lives of children, and not only the lives of children, but seniors and people that are immunocompromised. It's all across the board, and we just can't let this happen in our state. So that's the other piece of it that I wanted to mention, and I think that's a bit for right now.
And yeah. Senator Rich, just so you know, it is number six now.
Oh, it is number six.
Yeah, now. Under community health.
Okay, great.
Brought up. Okay.
Okay.
Commissioner Fisher.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple quick items. Obviously, this commission has been very studious in bringing forth our six initiatives. We didn't want to give you a list of, you know, 30. So you can read them. I don't need to repeat them. But there's two focus I want to make on. Number one is on the South Florida Regional Transportation Authority that I sit on now. I would hope and pray that you would fight hard for FDOT to continue funding for that. They cut us from almost $43 million to $15 million. I'm hearing that might have been a mistake last session. So we are confident that we can get that back in play, because it's most important to have Tri-Rail operating and what that system service and who they service. And then that parlays into our commuter rail that we are definitely focused on. And we now have the south portion of the county, and then we got to get over under the river. That's a whole nother story. But at the same time, we need to get a new starts for our north side of the river, which is my district. And we have cities and municipalities that have already plan for their stations. They have created developments from affordable housing to even in Oakland Park, moving their city hall right there where the transportation hub would be. So I would hope and pray that you would fight for that for us. And then lastly, I want to hear from you as far as the property tax issue. So need to know where you all stand and any ideas and how we can help you at the end of the day. Get to where we need to be on that, because that would be totally devastating to our county and our municipalities, et cetera. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Geller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There would be a lot of topics I would want to talk about, but I won't. For example, the RTA, which because they still have to pay for the tracks for Tri-Rail, doesn't really save what they think it will, or the apprenticeship program, which I think is extremely important. And for reasons that I have no idea, I think was a mistake, we passed an apprenticeship mandate down here, and the state preempted that and said you can't require apprenticeship mandates, which the state seems to want apprenticeships. I think that one was a mistake on their part when they did that. But I'm not going to discuss any of those. I want to focus my remarks on the property tax. I'll do this in three separate tranches. First, the CFO's numbers. You should be aware, because we've investigated, I've sent out three mailings to the 18,000 people on my email list. First of all, the CFO's numbers, if you look at his starting number in 20 versus 2025, he picked different numbers from our budget book. And then when you look at his population growth, instead of using the state accepted population growth, which is University of Florida Bureau of Economic and Business Research, BEBR numbers, which is what every local government uses, he picked another unnamed source that none of us have been able to figure out. And instead of using the inflation number for the MSA, the Metro Statistical Area, for Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach, he says he used a completely different inflation number, composite of local, state, and federal numbers, but he won't tell us what that is. If you look at the actual accurate numbers, Broward County falls within what he says we should. He's talking about how much over the numbers they are, but that's because his inputs are wrong. If you use the accurate inputs, we fall within his budget numbers. I'll be happy to share the details on that with anybody that asks. The governor's numbers, shockingly, are also wrong. When the governor kept talking about Broward County having a $9 billion budget, it's actually a $2 billion budget of our general reserve, of our general spending, GR, general revenue, which is, that is the number that the CFO is using. That's actually including our $250 million worth of reserves. If you take that out, our budget is $1.75 billion. The governor says you could eliminate all of property taxes and not affect law enforcement. 85% of our GR comes from property taxes. And according to Attorney General Uthmeyer, over 55% of our GR budget goes directly to the sheriff's office. So unless there is a new math, you can't eliminate 85% of our budget with 55% of our GR budget going to pay for law enforcement. It's impossible and not affect public safety. I did not vote for defunding the police when Black Lives Matter asked us to. I will not support defunding the police if the governor asks us to. And I'm hoping that you can convince the police and firefighter unions that, although they've been told, oh, don't worry, we can eliminate property taxes, but you'll be held harmless. They're being lied to because that's not possible. Maybe it's possible in Bradford County, population 20,000, but the only thing that Bradford and Broward have in common is that we both start with BR. The state might have enough money to supplement Bradford. It doesn't have enough money to supplement law enforcement in Broward, in Dade, in Palm Beach, in any of the 10 largest counties. And the last issue I wanted to discuss on that was the sheriff, and I think that Commissioner Bogan did an excellent job on that, Vice Mayor Bogan. But the fact is, when they're talking about, you know, they say, oh, look at how much money Broward's spending. Remember, 50%, over half of our budget goes to BSO, and that's without they're having direct law enforcement, because we're over 99% incorporated. So that 50% goes for regional issues. It's not, you know, the police riding around or the beat cop, if there are such things, in our suburban area. Primary law enforcement is being paid for by the cities, not out of the 50% from the county. So it is ridiculous that they say, counties, you're spending too much, but by the way, you can't even look at where the sheriff's money go. We have no idea how much he even gets between, I mean, we know how much we give him, we know how much cities give him, we don't know how much he gets from state or federal grants, we don't know how much he gets for forfeiture, we don't know where he spends the money that we give him, because he can arbitrarily and capriciously move it around. And I am not attacking the sheriff. I think he does a pretty good job at law enforcement. I'm just attacking the fact that we should know where his money goes so we can make better decisions on how much we give him and how much he needs. Thank you. If you have any questions, by the way, I'll be happy to get you all of the supporting data for the remarks that I made on the CFO numbers, governor's numbers, and sheriff's numbers.
Commissioner Udine.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for being here. I'm not going to repeat everything I heard, but you have our plan. Just a couple of things that I'm hearing from people in the public. First of all, they want property tax relief. So something needs to happen with home property tax relief. We just want to make sure we can be part of the conversation so that we can help go there. I mean, I know what happens when we get property tax relief. It hits our budget, but it's still a conversation that we need to have, that's something that the public is demanding. So I just want us to be more thoughtful and considerate together to the extent that we can. Something is going to happen. I just like to make sure that we're part of the conversation so that we can be heard with that. I'm also hearing from constituents extensively on the Live Local Act and how that's being put into play, you know, with different projects that are coming up. Again, it's something that I know that they're tweaking around the edges. You know, every session they're starting to talk about that. And everybody says that they want more housing, they want more affordable housing, they want more supply of housing. Until that supply of housing and affordable housing and more housing comes anywhere near them, and then nobody wants it. So I think that's a conversation that we would like to be involved with the state as well. Christine, I love your bill on the open carry loophole. I hope it gets heard. I'm hearing that from a lot of people. I mean, is that a bad thing to say? I mean, I wanted to, yeah. I hope it gets heard. I don't know how the process works as much up there, but I'm hearing from a lot of constituents on, you know, no one wants to take away anybody's Second Amendment rights, but they just want to make sure that they can, you know, go to public places in a safe and reasonable fashion. Just in the time that I've been here on the county commission, I mean, just the security to get it. I mean, last year when you guys came here, we didn't all have to go through metal detectors. We just live in different, you know, day and ages. I'm seeing it too with, you know, all the religious institutions and all the schools. I'm going to take the schools out for a second because that's been well documented. But I can't believe what the local religious institutions now have to spend on security for their facilities. It's really, really, it's just something that we need to look at and go from there. I'm also supportive of further discussion on some of the digital asset bills that are up there. I think that's something that's coming. And talking about some of the ways that, you know, digital assets can be used or not used. We talked about putting some of our cultural things on the virtual reality that was kind of doged apart as being the metaverse, which it wasn't the metaverse. But I think that we should, I'd like to pay some attention to that to make sure that we can be part of the process too when it talks about digital assets. And lastly, I just want to thank Representative Hunchovsky and Senator Polsky, the Agami Bridge that's going in your district. I get emails from the Agamis all the time. We passed our thing here in Broward County two meetings ago, and I know in December sometimes we're going to do something, sometime we'll do something out there, and the community in Northwest Broward is very happy about that. Thank you.
Commissioner Davis.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, everyone, for coming. So good to see you. It's my first time here in this forum with you as the newest commissioner here. The commission priorities, I'm sure you have them. I'm in agreement with all of them. Just a couple of things. I'm in agreement with the open carry in terms of what you mentioned on Glenna's show, very important. Because I think some cities have different interpretations. I think it's not clear. Because I've seen people say, oh, you can't open carry in meetings, city buildings, and it seems like you're getting different opinions from different attorneys on the matter. So I think that needs to be clarified, really. It's kind of in a gray area. Also in terms of mental health, mental illness, I know in terms of social workers in police departments, I'm not sure if there's any thought process on that. I don't think we have enough. And too often we have the mentally challenged that have an episode and have a gun. And too often they end up, you know, their family members calling police and then they get shot and killed. I'm not sure if there's anything that can be done there. And then finally, the information on AI. I don't know if you are doing anything in particular on the AI stuff that's coming out and people are using it and how to use it. I'm curious how they use it in schools. I mean, is anybody writing their own papers anymore? Are they learning anything on their own? You know, so just if there's any concern and being given to AI. Thanks.
Commissioner McKenzie.
I'll be brief. Even though I wasn't in the room, I was still listening. And I thank you for the updates that you brought to us here today. I will not be giving any opinions or input. I just pray for you in Tallahassee and wish you continued success.
Commissioner Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to stay with one topic and one topic only. My colleagues want to guess what topic that might be? Okay, and that is affordable housing. You know that as where I'm going to be and live local and what that means to our constituents. When they talk to me, they're talking to me about their children not being able to afford a property here in Broward County or South Florida or Florida in general. All right, so that is a main concern for us. And then I'm looking at our seniors. And they are already on fixed income. I know I'm speaking and preaching to the choir, but from a different perspective, when they tell me, oh, my bills are going up, my light bill is going up, and, you know, and I'm saying, okay, they can't, they're not getting assistance to harden their homes, so their light bill will always be higher because of the energy situation. So if there's any funding that we can target towards our seniors and those on fixed income to help them to harden their properties so it'd be more efficient that would be well received in our district, all of our districts, right? And of course, when you would talk about home ownership wealth, it doesn't come from rental apartments and generational benefits to having a home, right? Doesn't come from all of these rental properties. Bricks and mortar, they're hot. You have no recreational amenities on most. The parking situation creates problems. You hear folks fighting over parking, and we're constantly building without capacity for parking. Yes, in one apartment, you might have three drivers. Okay, you can't use the ratios we were accustomed to determine, you know, how many parking you need. Yes, we need affordable housing. And yes, I heard, not in my backyard, but we all have to do our fair share. So I'm not concerned about that any, but just wanted to share there are different and many aspects of housing. Homelessness, it's a different category. Our seniors sustained in what they currently own. And for the rest of us who, thank you. Do I have more to say about affordable housing? No, I think I've done it all. All right, thank you very much.
Okay. Commissioner McKenzie.
I just want to add to the record that I do, and we do give our vision and what we would like to see in Tallahassee to our administrator, and it's given to our lobbyists and our staff person. Marty Cassini does a very good job taking our voice up there. So that's why I didn't take the time today to beat a dead horse. But there is one thing that she just reminded me of, and that's the escalating property values. Folks like to talk about these 31 cities and other counties that your taxes are going up, and we've held the line. We even reduced this year, but state law prohibits us from dealing with if we went to a Marty here right now and asked for the acceleration of the assessments to stop, it has to come from Tallahassee. So, are any of you addressing that? Because I think the voters always think it's Broward County that's charging them all this money. As you heard Senator Gallagher go over our budget, you know, and talk about, you know, how we break it down and the 25 cents that we get from every dollar. But it's really this runaway assessment. Some people in business, we love it. It's an ATM card. But the people, the 2 million people here in Broward County, I'm sure there's a large share, a lion's share, as Hazel's talking about, they can't afford this town. And I think we really have to look at it, but we don't control it here. It's controlled from another place. And what we did control, I think even in the past, commissioners, they did a very good job at holding the millage rate and trying to do everything they can to make this town affordable. But that's a runaway train right now. So, and I know you don't have, you know, the votes, but they might grant us something on this. I mean, is that something anybody in this room is working on or even looked at the way I just explained it? So I never hear anybody talking about it. We talk about all the other stuff.
Thank you, Commissioner, for bringing that up. That was actually a discussion in one of the property tax select committee meetings. Mm-hmm. I've had several residents in my community reaching out to me that their market valuation, so mm-hmm. not their taxable value, but their market valuation has decreased. But because of the laws, their taxable value has increased. And I have something in drafting to address that. There was, for everybody's edification, there was a ballot initiative several years ago that said that one of the things it said was that if your market value decreased, you wouldn't increase with your taxable value. And that's what I have in drafting right now. However, it did not pass with the necessary percentage. And maybe it's because the language was confusing. But that is something that's being looked at because it kind of doesn't make sense that if your market value is going down, that your taxable assessed value continues to increase. And I hope that addresses kind of what you were talking about a little bit.
It addresses it, but I want to see a bigger effort to see how we, you know, we get a hold of. We talk about these the gun laws. We talk about all these other things that we really can't control. But this town is not affordable anymore for the regular person. And we do a lot for affordable housing. I mean, Senator Rich has spent her career and others are around the table. But what we now advocate for workforce and affordability still, in my humble perspective, is not affordable for the everyday person. And I was watching the news this morning, I think, in Miami-Dade, you have to have $130,000 just to income just to be able to buy a $300,000+ home. And anytime that I can find a way to address these issues, I do it. And I think the state needs to help us because oftentimes we get these laws that we can't circumvent. And that's my pet peeve, and Monica's heard it for 3 years now. And they've heard it, and just wanted it on the record.
If I may.
I'm sorry. As co-chair from the Senate side, we heard from Representative Humchowski. I have to give Senator Sharif an opportunity to respond. And thank you, Commissioner, for raising this issue. And then we'll go back to the chair.
Thank you, Chair. Well, first of all, we have done some things collectively as a Senate body, and with my colleagues this session, we chose to try to tackle property insurance because that actually hurts the ability of a person to afford to live here. So the property insurance values over the past 6 years have kept continuously increasing. In some cases, in some areas in my district, it was by 50% or more. And we've collectively each put forth a bill to address that. And so I spoke earlier about my bill, which is that we want to cap any increases annually at no more than 10% and give homeowners an avenue to file a complaint or a dispute if they think that their property insurance has gone above what it should be. The second thing that I did over the summer in regards to that, because we've gotten the complaint that property tax bills are going up, but I cannot eat the value of my home, right? My paycheck does not go up by 10%, and I can't spend that money up front because that is a future realized value, right? And so that combined with the issue that, you know, the governor brought forth about elimination of property taxes, we've been doing a lot of on the ground work in terms of educating our people in this county about what property taxes mean to them. And while there is that disconnect between whether or not this is needed, whether or not it's needed at the level in which it's needed, including what we spoke about earlier in regards to the audits, I think has been one of those things that has been difficult for us to break through because people are hurting so bad right now. If we put that on the ballot, it would be unfortunately something that we would be worried about passing because people need relief. And so my focus as a state senator and in all my conversations with the governor, with our affordable housing staff that we have working on bills, I think that has been at the forefront of our mind. And I want you to know that just because you don't see a bill filed right now doesn't mean that it's not in drafting. So just look out for that. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'll throw a few remarks as well. And then it'd be a chance to hear from everybody else. Is that good? Okay. First, I agree with Vice Mayor Bogan on the sheriff thing. I think some of the proposals we've seen looks like it's trying to exempt that, and I do think that's, you know, just so you all know, we can't audit the sheriff. we really don't know when that's such a huge part of our budget. We need to have that information. With what Lamar Fisher's talking about with the SFRTA and the commuter rail, I talked with Mayor Levine LaCava yesterday. And just so you all know, CEFTEC, which is all three counties, Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach, have all voted in support, not only from CEFTEC, but also from the South Florida Regional Planning Council, that we're 100% in favor of trying to keep those funds from the SFRTA there, as well as the $200 million that was being set aside for the new starts for the BC, for the BC Commuter Rail South. We think that that was probably by mistake, and so in Miami-Dade is, we're giving them the benefit of the doubt that that money, you know, was taken out. We'll find out. But we do need that. Miami-Dade already has $375 million to leverage it on the federal side. We don't, but we're applying for that. We applied for the new starts last week. So those are important. For those who don't know, the new Broward County Solid Waste Authority has accepted the master plan. That means a few things are going to go into play, and you're going to probably see somewhere somebody putting new bills in dealing with compost. The reason that's important is because that gets taken out of the haulers' tonnage of their garbage, but it needs to be able to be looked at independently, because that's where, when we passed the landfill expansion here in Broward County, that allowed for 17% of our garbage, actually 34% of our garbage, to be composted up in Palm Beach County. That can only be done if it's looked at independently, away from just regular municipal waste. So if you're not quite sure what's going on, I hope you'll contact Solid Waste Authority to make sure we're not at at different ends there. I've talked to Maria on her property tax proposal. I think it's very good. The one that's looking at new buyers, kind of keeping it at a lower rate. I like that a lot. Your open carry bill, I think, is excellent. I hope that can pass. And I know that the SB 180 bill, that has a lot. I think somebody's looking at the glitches on it. Yeah. Have you already looked at the analysis of Richard Grosso? I don't know if you haven't. I've got handouts. I'll just pass these around. Take a look at these. These are very good. It's a very good analysis, a lot of ammunition there for glitches. With that, let me pass it back over to co-chair.
And thank you all so much for all of your input and the information. It better helps us to hear from you on the local level. We all represent different areas and different needs of our community. And we're at an exciting time in Tallahassee, working as both the Senate and the House of Representatives. In the Senate, we're really focused on how we can help relieve some of the burden that's caused by high property taxes. We have a phenomenal leader in the person of Senator Lori Berman, who's not a member of our caucus, but her leadership is really aligning us and having us streamline our focus. What I'm going to do at this time is I'm going to recognize Senator Polsky. We're smaller in numbers in the Senate, who is one of our senior senators. And then I'm going to ask Representative Hamtowski to finish her discussion that she was having, and then we'll have the other reps speak. Before I do that, I just want to say I'll get mine. They're easy out of the way. I have a bill to ask for tax relief for those persons that are spending money on hurricane windows and things to harden their homes. The issues that are keeping me up right now, there's a lot of things going on, are issues like when I see the documentary, The Alabama Solution, and the horrible things that are happening to people that are incarcerated. And this will be my second year filing an inmates' rights bill that did not get heard last year. So I'm going to be sounding the alarm even more just because people are incarcerated. We have to have a commitment in policy that we're going to treat them like decent human beings. The other thing that's keeping me up at night that I haven't put legislation to, and I'm open to any suggestions and ideas. If you're serious, please talk to me offline. Is I'm trying to understand the dynamic of what I'm seeing. And I personally feel like we kind of discriminate when it comes to this issue. We have a lot of conversation about black on black crime and those statistics. But when I look at the statistics of mass shootings, now sniper shootings, I look at increased mental health and suicide rates, I'm very concerned about the anger and aggression that I see from young white males. And that is something that I want to work on around mental health with anybody that's going to be serious about addressing it. We have to care about all of our children, and we have to put things in place to help mitigate it. I don't have the answer. It's just something that's keeping me up at night. Now to one of our senior policymakers in the Senate, Senator Polsky.
Thank you, Senator Osgood. Just 8 years in. It's hard to believe. Just to address a couple of the things that were brought up. First of all, we are doing the dedication for the Daniel Agami Bridge on December 16th at 12. Bob, well, I'm sure put it out to everyone. And you're all invited, and I hope that you can come a bittersweet occasion to celebrate Daniel Agami's service. I was so happy to work with Rep. Honchowski on that and the family, and everything takes a while, but we're proud to do it. And thank you for your role in it. It's interesting, it touches like three cities in our district, so it's a nice Broward County bill. As far as property tax goes, and I'm glad that Rep. Honchowski is speaking after me because she can clarify since she sits on this House committee, they came up with, I believe, 7 proposals. What I think is going to happen is the Senate will vote on which ones to go forward to the voters. And it would be impossible to have all 7 on because I think some of them even contradict each other. And we have to narrow it down. And maybe this isn't the exact language. Maybe we come up with 1, which would be better than having multiple on the ballot. I would hate to see that. But of the 7 that were proposed, if you all could take a look and say, we like this one, we don't like this one, this is why, especially in the Senate, that would give us a lot of information to work with. Like some one of you said, we're going to have to do something. This is clearly a mandate from on high, and we will be doing something, but it's really a question of what that is, and I think we need to be really careful about what that is. So your input will be invaluable. And you can look at those 7 proposals. There might be other bills out there, but I have a feeling it's going to be one of these 7 since this is what the committee put together. I appreciate all the comments on the open carry legislation. I will be very proud to sponsor that along with Rep. Honchowski. It's really important that we clarify, as was mentioned, people don't know where guns are allowed. Unfortunately, we can't stop Publix. They're a private company. If they want to allow it, then you can avoid it if you want. But if they're going to allow it, they're going to allow it. But where they are allowed in government buildings and otherwise, and clarify that private property owners can control, I think is very important. Just to be realistic, my guess is it does not get a hearing because they don't want their members to have to vote on anything gun-related in this regard. There might be pro-gun bills that they will put forward. This is a real difficult situation for many of our colleagues because if they vote for some common sense clearing up loopholes, then they're going to look soft. If they, say no, just open carry no matter what, then they're not going to look moderate. So they are betwixt and between, and my guess is they're just going to ignore it because that's what they do when it comes to issues like this. But that doesn't stop us from doing the right thing and putting forward the smart bill. So we will be happy to work on that. I wanted to bring up an issue that people may not be so aware of, unless you drive back and forth on 95 like I do. I have an EV car, and I've had an exemption for many years to use those lanes. That EV exemption is gone when your annual sticker is over, which it could be a different time for everyone, but it will be over this year or into next year. I am trying really hard to work with folks in government to see if we can get that back in for many reasons, but mostly because they were built at great expense, these express lanes, and we don't want people to not use them and just cause more congestion on the regular lanes. I think the EV exemption is a great idea for, obviously, the environment. I thought we wanted to encourage EV cars, but also just to ease the traffic on the main road. So now you're going to have people say, well, I'm not exempt. I'll just stay on the regular road. So I think that's a huge problem for Broward because we're in between. It's Miami, Broward, Palm Beach, where, you know, we need it. And I don't think people in the rest of the state realize how important these express lanes are and what it took to get them where they are. And now there's not going to be as much incentive for people to use them. So I'm trying really hard. There's a federal law that basically got rid of HOV lanes. Our EV exemption was interspersed into that HOV law. And I'm trying really hard to get our transportation people to agree to put it back. I don't know if the will is there, but it's something you might hear from your constituents that why am I getting charged for this? They might still put their blocker on and they're going to get charged. So that, you know, anything that the county can do to help, I would certainly appreciate that. I agree with Senator Rich on vaccines. I am trying to get the Senate to, and it's not going to be me, it's going to have to be a Republican and maybe a committee bill, to not allow the Department of Health to change vaccine rules. It's just not acceptable. We probably will be able to keep the ones that are in statute because that would require an act of the legislature, and I do not see the will of the legislature in getting rid of the requirements. However, there are some other newer vaccines, not new, but newer, that the Department of Health is going to change the rulemaking, and I think that's just going to be really confusing. So I think it's incumbent upon us to stop any changes to the vaccine schedule without legislative approval. We'll see how far that goes. Very quickly on SB 180, I was told by the author of that bill, Nick DeSegli, he is going to fix the glitches. It wasn't his intention. It was somehow shoved in the very last day, that language. I mean, listen, they knew what they were doing, but we didn't have an opportunity to expand on it. It was never debated in any committee because that wasn't what the bill was, which is pretty typical of what happens. And there have been other senators, at least, who have filed bills, but I think it's going to come down to Senator DeSegli fixing it, but he has promised to do so. Those are all my little updates and answers to questions and questions for you. And as Senator Osgood said, if you have any ideas for legislation, we're still in the drafting stage and we still have time to get it forward. So please reach out to any of us. And we certainly would be happy to see if we can bring something forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Humtasky.
Thank you. Property Tax Select Committee has been really interesting. It's actually been incredibly educational. One of the things that came up in our last committee meeting was talking about the people who have mortgages and how 74% of the mortgage bill they get is their principal and interest, 10.6% is their property insurance, 10% is their property tax, which when people look at their trim notices will see that it's a whole bunch of things. It's not just your county taxes and your city taxes. And also, please remember that when we're talking about getting rid of property taxes, it's not including school taxes, which are a good 30%+ of your tax bill. And 5.4% is miscellaneous. And the reason I bring all this up is we are absolutely, to Commissioner McKenzie's point and to everybody's point here, in an affordability crisis in many ways. One of the things as a mom of two boys who are 27 and 24 that gets me worried is the young people are leaving Florida because they can't get the jobs here that will pay for them to afford to live here. So they're going to Chicago, they're going to New York, they're going to Atlanta and all other places because in spite of all the good work that's been done over the years, we still don't have the businesses and the economies here. We'll have a business or two, but we don't have that cluster that we need of those high-paying jobs to afford the affordability issues we have here. So it's good to talk about one aspect, but I think we're missing the mark if we're not talking about all the things that affect affordability. And I will go back as somebody who, my predecessor, Commissioner Udine, when I was mayor of Parkland and when we went through COVID, people were losing their jobs, people were losing their businesses, and we went to the rollback rate because we did not believe that a person should pay a dollar more in taxes when they're losing their businesses and having trouble paying. And when our constituents are going through that and they have to tighten their belts, we should also tighten our belts. But property taxes didn't bring us this problem, and it is also not the answer to this problem. And so I think when we're looking at affordability, it has to be a whole host of things. My concern with the complete elimination of the non-school homesteaded property tax, we have to have all those precursors to it, is that there are some cities like the one I live in where it would annihilate 75% of the ad valorem revenue coming into the city. And while you can make the statement that you cannot reduce the amount you pay for police, there isn't a city or a county where the police costs don't go up 5-10+% a year, and you will not have the money for those increases. Additionally, there is no protection for 911 services, which are literally life or death situations. And there is a difference if you have a 2-minute response time versus a 10 to 15 minute response time. And I just ask that when we're having these discussions, and I do believe in the Property Tax Select Committee, we've done a good job of having thoughtful discussions. I will also say these bills did not come from that committee. It came from some members in the committee. But that it's really important that we level set with everybody and we do our best to address the overall affordability crisis that is not going to be fixed with one bill in one area of this bigger affordability crisis. So, regarding open carry, thank you. When that statement was made, for those who aren't aware, there were protected spaces previously in the law where you were not allowed to bring a handgun or a concealed firearm. And I use those two words purposefully because that's what the statute says, handgun or concealed firearm. Once open carry was allowed, firearms that are not a handgun or not concealed are no longer captured in those protected places. Those protected places do include government meetings, which would be your city commission meetings and your county commission meetings and your legislative meetings. The difference between what the legislature can do and what the cities and counties can do is there is not a preemption on the legislature the same way there is a local preemption on your cities and counties. If the cities and counties do anything relating to gun legislation beyond what's in statute, they can have personal fines and they can be removed from office. Members of the legislature, if they were to refuse someone to come in with, for example, an AR-15, they wouldn't be subject to the same penalties that someone in local government would. All I'm trying to do with the bill I have is to go back to what we had prior, that those protected spaces not only include what's in statute, a handgun or a concealed weapon, but that they also include any firearm or weapon, even if it's an AR-15. I don't think that should be handled differently from a handgun. It is completely just aligning and updating the statutes to go to encompass what the original intent was, that you could not bring a firearm or weapon into those spaces. A couple of bills that I'm working on since AI was brought up is AI dealing with behavioral health practitioners, so that when a practitioner is practicing with the patient, that is done with person to person, and it's not done with an AI. And I'm also working on some AI chatbot language. And I want to give a big shout out to Marty and Monica for being consistently available to answer questions, especially when it's dealing with property taxes, because I want to make sure whenever we're dealing with an issue that we're dealing with the facts around it. And you've also been very helpful in a lot of the housing bills that have come in front of the Housing, Ag, and Tourism Committee. So I just want to, I think it was Commissioner McKinsey who mentioned you do a great job, and you absolutely do a great job. staying in touch with all of us, keeping us informed, and making sure that we're hearing what the real-time effects would be of any legislation coming in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Honchowski. And just to be clear, she was talking about a property tax committee that is only on the House side. We don't have that committee on the Senate side. This issue has not been raised in this way on the Senate side. And in Tallahassee, in order to get anything done, well, it used to be, it has to go through both sides of the chamber. Now it can just show up the last 2 days of the extended session and be attached to something that has nothing to do with it. So I just wanted to be clear about that. I'm going to go next to my former colleague on the school board, an outstanding representative, and I'm going to push her a little bit as she gives her comments to also talk about the horrible things that's happening to public education right now. Representative Baldwin.
Thank you. I guess I'll start with the bill that it was a bill that actually died in session. It went through the process. We tried to put guardrails in it. It was such a terrible bill. The last night of session at 10 o'clock, it died. We show up to Tallahassee to pass the budget, and it's put in the budget implementing language. This is incredibly dangerous. Imagine owning a business and you have an extra room, and someone says to you, you don't need that room. We're going to take that room. You're not going to be able to charge rent. You're going to have to pay for their electricity, their property insurance. You're going to have to pay for their food, their janitorial staff. You're going to have to just pay for everything. And if they need security or whatever they need, if they need your office staff, they get to use all of that. That's what this bill does. It has to do with schools of hope. So a school of hope was about failing schools. And I don't think any of us could argue the fact that if we're failing children in a school and we want to put a charter school provider in there to do something different, that that's not a good idea. What you saw in the paper is this extension and this real estate grab. So basically what they've allowed to happen is they've allowed six HOPE operators on a first come, first served basis to take any school that appears to have open spaces on a fish report. A guardrail that we brought up and tried to put in, you will see what are our most successful schools here in Broward County? Our technical colleges. They have waiting lists. We have a private charter company now asking to take over those buildings. Because when you look at the fish capacity, it doesn't account for adult attendance. We have ESC centers that are basically mini hospitals where you have a room built for 25 kids, but they only have six kids in the room. All of our ESC centers, they don't even participate in testing, by the way. They've asked for those buildings. There are absolutely no guardrails at all on this bill. And it's just privatization. And it really is giving away our public schools. They're not asking for schools that are the failing schools. They're asking for the A schools. And they're going to disrupt the whole campus. If we have a high-performing, great public school, why would you allow someone in to destroy that space? Why would you allow them to come in, and why would the traditional public school students have to pay for those charter school students? They sell us all the time that the money follows the kid. Well, if the money follows the kid, then why are our traditional public school students fitting the bill for those charter school students? So it's total BS. There are absolutely no guardrails. It was put in the dead of night without anything, and it really will destroy the public schools. So right now, it's not just impacting Broward County. There are Republican counties that are being impacted. The parents need to get together. They need to uprise because we need to take back our traditional public schools. And it really was just a real estate grab. So I am working with coalitions right now on trying to put in guardrails for next session. A lot of the Republican legislators that supported this and ignored our comments are feeling the heat from their parents now. And it's just wrong what they're doing. And hopefully we can file, it's going to have to come from leadership. We're going to outline the guardrails, but they're going to have to do something. So that's what's happening in terms of destroying public education. What's happening in terms of destroying you and local government is this property tax situation. And I want to remind everybody, I know there's a lot of wish lists in terms of funding, but in 2 years, according to the Budget Conference Committee, we go from a multi-billion dollar surplus to a multi-billion dollar deficit. And you will see over the next couple of years, more and more cuts, less and less projects. That's our future. So in the middle of all of this, we're going to cut property taxes with no way to replace that revenue. And that's something that has to really be discussed, because other states have, you know, the other means of taxing people. We don't have that in our Constitution. We can do property taxes. We have our sales tax, et cetera. That's all we can do. So, and what's scary to me is they're putting it on the ballot, and people are hurting, and you have no way to educate people, because we have taken that out of your hands by putting guardrails up on the money you can spend on educating the public. So it's very scary for you all, because if you go out and start educating them, you know, DeSantis is going to be watching you, and did you cross the line in terms of the bill we passed that prohibits you from doing that? So I know Senator Sharif and I had a town hall meeting in Weston, and we're starting to educate the public on what this means, because everybody wants their property taxes reduced. But everybody also wants their garbage picked up. They also want the fire to then to show up. They want the police there. And what Representative Honchowski said is very true. If you, what's going to happen is over the next 2 years, you guys will probably not be increasing any funding to law enforcement, nor would any municipal government, because it's going to be frozen. So any future FRS increases, raises, that's going to be gone. I don't know how the fire department got left out, because usually they're together in terms of union. They're always working together. But you really need, and I know Marty does a good job of this, but we need amendments. We need the data breakdown of how much this is going to cost. You have it in writing now, so you can start collecting that data for us so we're ready. There is something about only doing, to your point, Commissioner McKenzie, one of the proposals is you only assess the property values every 3 years, so you wouldn't see that increase every year. That's one of the proposals. There's a proposal for people who are 65 and over. I can't wait for that, because that'll really decimate the villages. I don't mean to be so partisan, but it is something that we have to be prepared for, and just know that it's coming, and the best thing you can do is educate us, because, and also, it's a distraction. It's not just property taxes, it's property insurance. Mind you, those property taxes, it's not going to provide relief, and nobody is talking about, and we're still getting legal clarification, what happens to the hospital districts? What happens to the Children's Services Councils? What happens to all those that come under that? It's going to be a problem. So I know everyone is looking to see if they're included, if they're not included. Also, what no one is talking about, uncompensated care that's about to happen. 4.7 million Floridians get their health care on the Affordable Care Act, you know, network. And we just had a budget meeting and looked at the budget and what's going to happen. I'm on all the health care committees. And there are some of those plans are going to go up 54%. So in my congressional district alone, that's 80,000 people who are going to lose their insurance. They're going to go to the emergency rooms for primary care. That's going to be, that's going to have a huge impact on all of us. They're not going, kid care has not been implemented. I passed that bill 2 years ago. They refused to implement it. The Senate is fighting. We are fighting on the House side. So imagine all the kids now who are going to go without insurance. So that's something that's going to have to be discussed, because it's going to impact this county. Also, what they're also not talking about is you're going to see changes over the next couple of years, of course, after the midterm election, to how we fund Medicaid and Medicare. And just right now, our cancer centers, the money we have for to bring oncologists and specialty doctors in, all of that's going away. It's going to be a $3.8 billion cut on those special line items, and that's going to be annual. So now let's put this all together. We have a budget deficit, we have the healthcare crisis about to hit the fan, and we're going to talk about property taxes but not have any real solution as what to do. And honestly, if we pass all of these or a portion of all these, I mean, you're going to be left holding the bag for 2 years till we could get something on the ballot to fix it. So we really have to get those numbers and educate people, and that's what I'm looking for from each and every one of you. So thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Baldwin. And, you know, we're having this conversation about property taxes, and it's always this behind-the-scenes conversation about communities like the one, some of the cities that I represent, where the people are renters. They don't own the homes. And sometimes people feel like they're carrying the burden for them. So as we move through this discussion, I'm never going to be for taking away property taxes and sticking it to a sales tax or something that costs poor people to have to even pay more to live. It's very regressive. And I want to just be clear about that. As we address these issues, we have to think about all of the people that we serve. I don't have children in school, but I gladly will pay whatever I need to pay to support the school district. But this is a huge problem as we move forward as a county. And I think the more information you give us, I've polled all of my cities in the county to see directly how this would impact. And I've been very, it's been very interesting to see how everybody uses the money differently, but they use it and it's justified, you know, in what they're doing. And Representative Baldwin, thank you. You were kind of nice today. So as we move forward for us, we have to know that this big, beautiful bill, the big, beautiful bill, I said it, we've been skating around it, the big, beautiful bill is big and ugly for Broward County. No matter what your income level is, no matter what your political party is, if you get into the details of what's going to happen, what's being pushed down to the state, we already don't have the money, no way of generating money. It's going to be pushed down to the county and to the local governments. You're the ones that people are going to come and yell at when they don't have services because they don't understand that the money has been taken away from us from the top. So we can't be bullied into not talking about things in a real way when it's going to have such a significant impact on the lives of the people that we as public servants, whether elected, appointed, that we serve every day. I'm going to go to my other partner in crime, Representative Daly, and then Representative Robinson, who covers, you know, a couple of counties.
Thank you, Senator, and good afternoon, everybody. So I bang my knee on the table. Good to be with you all. I'll be brief. I just want to go over a couple of issues that I'm looking into this session. Appreciate this forum and opportunity to hear from all of you, and good to see you all. First and foremost is a bill that Senator Polsky and I have worked on every year, I think, since I've come into the legislature. That's Jamie's Law for Jamie Guttenberg. I am hopeful that it can at least we can at least have a conversation, right? I think we're there's going to be and there needs to be a renewed conversation about firearms in this state, and I'm hopeful for the first time in all the years that Senator Polsky and I have filed it, we can at least have a conversation about Jamie's Law, which would be a background check on ammunition. I understand it's a long shot given the makeup of the legislature. Call me Pollyanna. I feel like there is a time to have the conversation, and I think that time may be now, if ever. I did want to mention I'm bringing back the educator certification bill. This is a bill that, as part of someone's formal education to become a teacher, they would be required to take course instruction on what to do, heaven forbid, there is a mass casualty incident. It's based off of a program that already exists at Indian River State College, the FERTES program. It's awesome. It partnered with local law enforcement. It's not making teachers first responders. I understand how much we ask teachers to do. I'm not asking them to be a first responder. I just want to make sure that the training and the education is there, so heaven forbid if something happens, they know how to respond to it. Unfortunate reality of the world that we live in today. So bringing that back again, and one other one that I'll mention, well, two others that I'd like to mention. I'm working with the Florida Sheriff's Association on Victim Safety and Pretrial Release Act. Basically, there are times where, I think you all know I'm a former prosecutor, so I've seen this firsthand in court, where someone is told, is arrested on, let's say, a domestic violence incident, brought in, you know, in front of the judge issues a stay away order. You're required to stay away from the victim in this case, and they don't. There's nothing police can do. They can respond to the home with the individual standing outside this person's house, the victim's house, and police hands are tied at that point, depending on how the charges went through. So looking to kind of add some additional protections there, so we can expedite getting that person back in front of a judge for violating that stay away order and increasing the safety of the victim in those cases. The one other one, and I know there have been attempts at it in the past, I know I've worked with many of you around the room the last couple of years on an issue with FLHSMV, the Highway Safety Motor Vehicles. I don't understand how they're as respectfully bad at their job as they are and continue to get the budget that they get. As you know, eventually the licensing and permitting and all of that will go over to our tax collector, our newly elected tax collector, but for the time being, it's been with FLHSMV. So I know a number of my colleagues around the table and many of you in conjunction with your offices have sponsored the mobile buses and the flow buses and getting people licensed. But I'm always reminded of the number of articles I've seen about seniors waiting out for hours and hours on end just to get a driver's license. So in my opinion, FLHSMV has not been able to do their job, hasn't been able to do it for years, and yet we continue that to give them a bigger and bigger budget every year. Working with my colleagues on the House TED Committee, we were able to get an additional $3 million specifically to Broward and Miami-Dade to increase licensing and to slow wait times. Still waiting for some of that information to come back to see if it was successful or not. But one of the policy initiatives that I'm looking into is right now you have an entity that doesn't do that job very well. But the other component, and you all may be aware of this, of FLHSMV is also to oversee the Florida Highway Patrol, which if you've seen anything in the news about the Florida Highway Patrol, has staffing issues, has overtime issues, can't get enough troopers on the road to keep our roadways safe. So in my estimation, they have two jobs. They don't do either of them particularly well. So I am looking to potentially move Florida Highway Patrol out from under FLHSMV and put it under the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Not trying to create a state police, not trying to compete with any of the sheriffs. I just think there may be some more management oversight in that body than there is in FLHSMV. Open to suggestions, very much up in the air. I just want to see the solution. I just want to see FLHSMV do the job they're supposed to be doing. Right now, they can't do either of them. So with that, that's just a couple of the things we're working on. I look forward to seeing you all in Tallahassee for Broward Days. And until then, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rep. Robinson.
Good afternoon. I just want to respond a little bit to the conversation. I believe most of my colleagues have done a really good job in talking about the property tax issue. What I would say is that, and as Representative Hunchowski said, when she broke it down, property tax and property insurance is pretty much at the same percentage. My personal experience, I haven't had any of my constituents so much talk about property tax as much as they have talked about property insurance. And so I do want us to always make sure that as we have conversations that we're trying to fix something that will break something else. If you take away property tax, it's a sure thing that local governments are going to have very limited control to continue to serve their residents. However, when we talk about property insurance, which is going to a private industry, we're not saying anything about that, and we're continuously giving them money. So I think that one thing I would like for you to do, and I know that there are laws about you educating people about bills, but right now there isn't a bill. A bill hasn't been passed. And you all have done a pretty good job with this flyer. I think that more needs to be done in ensuring that the residents truly understand how the dollar is broken up. I served in local government also in Dade County, and this is something that when I sat on the council on all of my meetings, I always did at least once a year to ensure that the residents understood how their dollar is being spent. And being an educator, I know for a fact that people do when they know better. They do better when they know better. And that's a part of UL's job, is to ensure that they truly have a clear understanding of what's happening and don't get fooled by what they're being told. When we're talking about legislation for this year, some of the things that I'm working on, and again, I would say that it is very important for us to look at affordability across the board. And one of the bills that I am filing, it's a version of a bill that I filed last year that actually passed unanimously, but then it was vetoed. But I'm bringing it back with some more precautions, and this would be HB 225. It's a consumer fairness in utility rates. And that is to ensure that residents are getting fair treatment across the board when it comes to surcharges and things like that. So putting some regulations and some controls around that. And I'm hoping that it would do just as well as the previous bill, and this time not being vetoed. Another thing that I'm looking at, and is very prominent here in South Florida, is I have HB 881, which is a post-surgical recovery home bill. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but I have spoke to Broward's state attorney and Dade state attorney, and we have had some serious concerns about post-surgical homes when people come and they have their cosmetic surgeries and it's outpatient, but then they go to these homes to get recovery that are not regulated. And so that particular bill will try to put some regulation around that. And the last one that I will share with you that's really important to me is a bill that I'm carrying with Senator Polsky. And we carried it last year, and we're going to bring it back, and that would be the data registration database. And that's actually a bill to correct some previous legislation that was passed a few years ago after Amendment 4. And this piece of legislation will have a database that will go across the state so that returning citizens will know their status and know whether they're eligible to actually vote. And although that's what it's mainly for, what I found in my research is that it would also help with our clerks of courts with other issues also. So those were the bills I'm working on this.
Thank you to all the legislators. And we're all available online at floridasenate.gov or My Florida House. We have staff that are available. I need just a moment to ask all of the staff of the legislators to stand, Senate staff, House staff. Would you just please stand and be recognized? We thank you guys. Come on, stand up, stand up. Come on this side. Listen, y'all young aides, when we ask y'all to stand up, I need you to stand up. It's not optional. Thank you so much for all of your hard work that you do. I want to recognize you publicly. People don't get to see you. We appreciate you, so we want to show you off. We want you to stand up so people know who you are. But thank you to all of the staff of the legislators. You keep us going. You do a lot behind the scenes to help us help our constituents. And I just want to say publicly that we appreciate you.
Great. Thank you. And I think, Senator Giller, you had one comment.
Very quickly, 90 seconds or less. Number one, Christine, whatever you do to the extent you can, please make sure that not more than one bill gets on the ballot. Because as bad as any one of them are, if three or four pass, you know, cumulatively it'd be devastating. Senator Polsky, I'm the one that passed that original bill dealing with HOV lanes. Something you should look at unless they've changed it. It wasn't just for electric, as a matter of fact, back then it was for hybrids, natural gas. So it's not just electric vehicles unless they've changed it. And that might be how you can get there. And finally, property insurance, there are ways of reducing it by a third or 40%. I had written a bill for Charlie Crist. Congressman Moskowitz has picked it up. I've worked with him. If you've looked at his bill, the problem is it needs to be done national level, but the over half of the property insurance portion is reinsurance, and the best way of fixing property insurance bills is by lowering the reinsurance component. I'm past national president of the National Conference of Insurance Legislators. Happy to discuss that with any of you that want to know how to actually reduce property insurance bills. It's by going after reinsurance.
That was a little more than a minute, but that's okay.
It was a minute.
Monica?
Okay, so before Senator Polsky leaves, I just want to say thank you to all of you for being here and for the job you're doing. You know, as someone who's been there, having the same lack of a majority, and my aide, Kristen Carter, is right across the table from me here, I just know how difficult it is, and so much more difficult because people just don't work cross over and talk to each other the way they used to. So I know you're in a distinct minority, and we really appreciate it because there's so many important things that we just discussed here today that, you know, I know it's difficult, but we appreciate the fact that you're up there trying your hardest to get it done. And I urge you to please use this as much as you can. Thank you for holding it up, Representative Robinson, because if you look over on the right-hand side, it's all the examples of the things that are going to be cut that we cannot sustain in this county, from parks. You talked 911, someone mentioned. Your fire rescue, county elections, human services, transit, paratransit, libraries, parks, animal shelter, all of those things are services that we provide out of that less than other half money that we don't give to BSO. So I just, but again, I just want to thank you. And we're all behind you and anything that we can do. And thank you for recognizing our staff because they do an amazing job. Thank you.
Thank you, Nan. Monica, bring it in for a landing.
Yeah, just really quickly, thank you again for bringing this up. Every single speaking engagement that any of us have, we bring these. And it's important. It's that education component. But I want to say thank you also because you all take my calls also. This is a collective effort to get the word out and to try to make a difference. But I did want to let the members know that we are working on, we've got fiscal impacts on almost all of them already. The second that letter came out, I had our team immediately start working with the property appraiser's office on values and all of those proposals. So we're almost ready with all of them, and we'll get those to you as soon as we have them, of course, with the board as well. But so far, the cheapest one, the impact is already over $100 million. That's the least impactful one so far. So it's going to be very painful. Thank you.
Thank you. Any last words?
Thank you to all the legislators, and I'm going to ask you, if you can, don't leave. I want to remind you that we have another meeting starting in 5 minutes with the League of Cities.
Thank you all very much. Everybody, they want to do a picture real quick. I don't know where. Can you go over there? By the sign over there? Commissioners, let's go.